Hi, I'm Doug Austin. I'm the editor of eDiscovery Today, a daily blog about eDiscovery, information governance, cybersecurity, data privacy, and artificial intelligence trends, best practices, and case law. Welcome to another edition of eDiscovery Today's Thought Leader Interview Series, where we interview thought leaders in eDiscovery and related legal technologies. Today we're doing a special on-site interview here at the 2024 CLOCK CGI Conference in Las Vegas. And we have a guest who just made a big career move, Josh Kramer, the new Chief Strategy Officer and General Counsel of FileRead. Welcome, Josh.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
You bet. So before we get started, let me introduce Josh. Josh just joined FileRead after spending 6 years at AstraZeneca, where he led the drug maker's e-discovery program and later expanded its scope to include a variety of in-source services designed to significantly reduce legal costs. Prior to moving in-house, Josh was at the global law firm Winston & Strawn LLP. In 2022, Josh was named on the annual list of the legal industry's AI visionaries, and he's a founding member of the Legal Data Intelligence Project. Josh is also a graduate of Harvard Law School and a member of the Washington, D.C. Bar. Ready to get started?
Let's do it.
Okay. So first of all, congrats on the new job announcement. And you're moving from a very large company where you led their e-discovery program to FileRead, which is a much smaller company. So what about the opportunity at FileRead convinced you to make the move?
So I have for many years really enjoyed working with young companies that have new products and new services to help them shape their offerings in a mutually beneficial way so that, you know, it's shaped so that we get what we needed at AstraZeneca, and then they're able to walk away with a structure that helps them then go to market, because typically our problems were similar to a lot of other problems of other large companies. So I've always really liked doing that. I've always really liked to be, you know, subject matter expert playing sort of in the technology space. And this was really an incredible opportunity to be able to kind of put one foot in product, one foot in marketing, and help bring the two together to make a really clear value proposition for the company, which is what I think they really need right now.
Okay. So for those who haven't heard of FileRead, could you explain what the company does and how they fit into the e-discovery lifecycle?
Yep. So our tool is an AI tool that's a conversational interface that plugs into existing platforms like Relativity. Not entirely unlike a ChatGPT, but with a few delightful twists, including that the data never goes to OpenAI. In fact, it doesn't ever leave the Azure cloud. All of the answers, every phrase of every answer is supported by citations in the documents that it got the answers from. It's one way that we put a check on hallucinations. And then also it can generate internal work product like chronologies, like timelines, like lists of key facts and key personnel, so that, you know, in-house teams can expand their reach into the work that they're doing. Service providers can elevate their level of work with their existing review teams, and law firms can continue to show value for the hours that they bill.
All right. Well, that sounds very impressive. Of course, pretty much everyone is talking about AI, and especially generative AI, and that's across just about every industry, including e-discovery. So how are generative AI technologies particularly suited to support legal and e-discovery professionals?
Sure. So I think we're reaching the end of a major hype cycle around AI, and for me, joining an AI company at this time, the end of that hype cycle, it's a feature for me, not a bug. It's not poor timing, it's great timing, because I think we're going to kind of weed out a lot of the kind of AI first, AI for the sake of AI type of tools, and refocus on value propositions. And so I think your question's a good one of like, where does it fit in? Where can you sort of lift the current process and shift this in? And so for us, it's really at any point where fact-finding really matters. In particular, in the post-review stage, when you're doing things like deposition prep, trial prep, settlement assessments. When the law firm is briefing their clients at the close of discovery to start making strategic decisions about what they want to do in the case, that's where we're able to use our tool to find facts fast. And it's not limited to e-discovery style data. So you can load in deposition transcripts. You can load in even notes from investigators or notes from attorneys, and it will bring those into its general sort of comprehension of the case. So I think there's a lot of different points where it fits in. One place where it does not, at least our tool does not fit in, is as any sort of replacement for first level document review. So this is, in that way, not similar to a, say, relativity error. Our goal is not to find every single relevant document in order to meet precise requirements. It's to help elevate the quality of internal work product. So it's not about meeting your obligation on the other side. It's about understanding your story and how to tell it.
Okay, very interesting. So we've touched on this a little bit, and we hear about some of the challenges associated with Gen AI, including hallucinations and potential data protection concerns, and even copyright infringement concerns. So what are your thoughts about Gen AI challenges for e-discovery, and how to mitigate them when using Gen AI tools and models?
I think that having to tie everything back to a source of evidence is an important check on hallucinations. Obviously, it wouldn't be practical for like a ChatGPT to really cite its sources and just takes fragments from across a training set of the entire web. But if it could, that would be a pretty good check on hallucinations, because it would say, okay, I actually had to get this from somewhere. Copyright protection issues, I think those sit mostly with the LLM creators. I think that they will get that worked out. I think it's a thorny issue, but not one that will be a true blocker to the adoption of generative AI. I think a deal's got to be worked out somehow, probably among ISPs, major media companies, and the OpenAIs and Anthropics of the world to just figure out how do we all work within this new data ecosystem. And I think they will figure it out, because I think that there's enough money to be made there that everyone is gonna find a way to benefit. And then having models that sit outside of the control and view and access of the bigger providers like OpenAI is really, really critical. So having, we have our own instance of Claude 3, we have our own instance of GPT-4, none of which go through the original LLM providers. And so we don't feed into their models, and then we're able to build our own models that are a lot more LLM agnostic. So we could swap between ChatGPT, even a Gemini or a Claude, and still be able to direct the tool in the same way. That also reduces, to me, dependency risk, because it's like right now there's so much built directly on top of OpenAI that if they were to just make certain choices or something were to happen there, it would have a huge impact on a lot of products. And we wanted to build around that dependency, because that's too big of, it's too much concentrated risk in one place.
Makes perfect sense. So how do you see the evolution of Gen AI relating to the use of TAR and predictive coding for e-discovery? Do you think it will complement TAR or possibly even replace the use of TAR for many organizations? And do you think Gen AI could even disrupt how legal services are billed and reduce dependency on the billable hour model?
So I'll separate that kind of into two parts. So the first is, I think it'll start by being complementary and ultimately potentially able to replace TAR. I think a big struggle is going to be, we spent 10 or 15 years fighting the fight around predictive coding to help judges understand it, to help, create a language we could all share through like statistical validation and models, to, seed sets and cutoffs and things like that. And having those fights even outside of the court process is very expensive. And I think that that's going to be a real turnoff to adoption in the short term, is like, look, we finally got some general acceptability around TAR. Now you want to throw on a new tool, and we're going to have all the same fights again. And there's going to be a lot of companies that are legal cost conscious that just don't want to have that fight. They're just going to say, let's just use TAR instead. But I think ultimately it will be adopted, and I think ultimately it will, you know, I think that there'll be, you know, GPT-5 is going to come out, these models are going to only get better, and I do think that it'll ultimately be a replacement for TAR, which is basically like a do a mini review, and the system will go out and copy your analysis. Instead, it's a totally different way to look at it, right? It's like the system will fully understand what you're looking for and be able to tailor it to the request that's been made. So that's on the first part of your question. Second part of your question, I think this could have huge potential to disrupt the current model for legal services. I think part of the problem is today, but part of what drives the billable hour today is that most legal services are not very scalable. They still rely on individuals handcrafting their work product. And so if you have more work to do, you need more individuals. That's sort of the opposite of scalability. Whereas if you can do more work without, you know, by leveraging technology and without necessarily needing to add to your headcount, you know, it means that more firms can take on flat fee and fixed fee cases. Smaller firms may be able to expand their reach and take on more cases. In-house providers or in-house corporate legal departments can insource more of the work because it becomes less individual person centric, I would say. With that said, I think there will always be a really important role for lawyers in the legal system. I think that there is a lot of nuance involved in applying facts to law and in legal strategy. And, you know, we frankly want to get out of the way of that. We know that there are companies that are, you know, trying to directly replace the work that lawyers are doing. We would rather help make the facts more accessible so that they can elevate their work rather than try to replace anybody's actual work.
Makes sense. So you mentioned insourcing, and during your time at AstraZeneca, you were not only responsible for leading their e-discovery program, but you were also responsible for insourcing many of the e-discovery services that have been traditionally outsourced. So what's your advice to corporate legal teams regarding taking more control of their e-discovery programs, and how should they address emerging technologies like generative AI?
So first I would say that taking over at least management of the process should be goal number one. Even if you're still having your highest cost providers carry out all the work, just the fact that you're managing and have an eye on all the work that's being done would be a big improvement for a lot of companies. It certainly was a big improvement for us circa 2018. Second, I think where you can bring in these tools in a way that's not disruptive to your service providers, that's also really useful. And that's where we found it was helpful to, you know, we fielded a team at AZ that could perform some of this work. So to put tools like this in their hands made sense. If you don't have that infrastructure, then it becomes about more about leveraging your relationships with your outside providers to get them to be more efficient, and then voting with your feet, making selections among providers, be it law firms or service providers, based on whether they can demonstrate that they're really utilizing technology to the fullest to deliver the most value to you.
All right. So, like any technology solution, I'm sure FileRead has a product roadmap. So what are some of the feature and capability requests you plan to address in the near term? And what are some of the long-term plans for the product that you can share?
Sure. So we are building more plugins and building our own platform. Right now, our tool plugs directly into Relativity. We want it to be able to plug into other review tools. We want it to also be entirely tool agnostic if people want to just use it separately. We're looking at ways to get closer to core data sources like M365 and Google Drive, thereby potentially even circumventing, you know, the collection process. We are really focusing a lot on building strong chronologies. We think that that is not only an important tool for litigators to use in litigation, but also to use in communicating issues to their clients, and for internal investigators to use. We found that, you know, a lot of companies' internal investigations really start with an outline of the facts that they create that sort of put into a chronology, and then they look and they say, okay, which of these facts are certain and which are not? And so we also are developing the accuracy of our tool along sort of a new axis that we're calling certainty. And so where confidence might say, we're confident that this is in the documents, certainty says, this is our level of certainty that this thing in the documents is actually a fact. And so, for example, you can be absolutely certain that a fact is that something in the documents is a fact if the event is the communication, right? So if it's like, you know, on September 8th, HR emailed this employee about X. If you've got that email to the employee about X in there, you're certain of that. Then on the far side of the scale would be sort of secondhand references. So an email where someone refers to someone else relaying information. And that's where your certainty is going to be very low. And we think that we could use that to help investigators and litigators kind of target areas where they're uncertain so that they can focus their work in the right place.
Interesting. All right. Very good. What else would you like our readers to know about what you're doing and working on?
Sure. So I'm very passionate about the Legal Data Intelligence Project. The goal of the project is to really help create a new language for how we describe the work that e-discovery professionals do, and a different framework for understanding those professionals themselves and the profession. I never have really liked phrases like lit support. You know, I don't like when I hear terms like non-lawyer. Sure, there are some contexts in which one must have a license to practice law, and there's a distinction there. But like, I think that e-discovery professionals too often get pigeonholed either as sort of project managers or as IT, you know, and sort of either on the paralegal side or on the IT side. And they're neither and both. And the capability, what we found in the way that we were able to expand our team at AstraZeneca is we found that that capability of being able to smartly work with sensitive data is applicable in lots of other areas of the company. You know, mergers and acquisitions, HR, just lots of compliance, internal investigations, even areas of finance. And so I really want to see this class of professionals elevated, and also to gain more widespread understanding of what we do. There were definitely times when throughout my career I've had to explain what is e-discovery to the same people many right. times over and over again. And until I started like throwing around the word evidence, it's like it didn't really click. And then I start using that word and people kind of understand a little bit better. Like, okay, working backwards, you got a smoking gun email that had to have come from somewhere. It started with e-discovery people pulling data.
Right. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. And you're preaching to the choir, certainly when it comes to me. I've been saying for years, e-discovery isn't just about litigation anymore. It's about discovering data for all sorts of use cases. Yeah, absolutely. And it seems as though CLOCK has really focused on, emphasized that initiative here. So that's good to see as well. So
I mean, I'd be fine if we just moved to using the term discovery more, frankly.
Sure.
It's all electronic now anyway.
Exactly. No, I mean, it really is at this point all electronic. It only just makes it harder to Google it to differentiate from other types of discovery.
Good point. It's a good point. There's a lot of drug discovery.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's the issue. So, but yes, otherwise I'd be on board with that. So, all right. Well, I want to thank my guest, Josh Kramer of FileRead. Thank you. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in to another edition of eDiscovery Today's Thought Leader Interview Series. See you next time on the eDiscovery Today Interview Network. Goodbye.